Welcome to Under the Influence, the podcast where we help chiropractors improve their communication skills so they can help more people and help people more. I'm your host, Dr. Martin Harvey. I'm a chiropractor and I'm an expert in communicating the value of chiropractic. Today on Under the Influence, I'm joined by Dr. Taylor Vagg. I think this is going to be a really fascinating and important episode for many of you because Taylor has a really interesting experience, as you'll hear as we get into the episode. And I think it's important because many of the challenges that I hear from people are, look, I've just graduated. What should I do to grow my practice? Or I've been in practice for a couple of years and I feel stuck at a certain level. What do I need to grow my practice? Or I've taken on an associate. What do I need to do to help them grow their practice and create a team environment? How do I balance having a practice and having a family? How do I balance having a practice, a family, and contributing to the profession? And just how do you get stuff done? How do you implement all the good ideas that you have so that they can make an impact? And Taylor is one of those people who has done all of the things that we're talking about and has some really important lessons and suggestions in terms of what you can do in your life to have more fun in practice and have more impact in practice as well. So really fascinating discussion. She's an amazing chiropractor and an amazing person, and I think you'll really enjoy it. A couple of announcements. I mentioned last week that there is a new special limited series podcast that Dr. Craig Foote and I have done called Cut the Crap. The focus of this first series is it's all about our perspectives on what it takes to develop certainty and also what are the myths and the bullshit that you can trim out that isn't really contributing to your certainty. If you want to catch me, this is coming out a couple of days before the one-day seminar, the Daily Visit Communication Intensive on May 18th in London. The link is in the show notes. The weekend after that, so Friday, May 24th and Saturday, May 25th, I will be at the Portuguese Chiropractic Association Conference in beautiful Lisbon, all about communication, caring and chiropractic. Get on it. The ACA Conference, I will be there in Cairns on July 27th and 28th. And today is the last day to get on, well, not the last day, but the last time I'm going to announce anything about the wait list for Aligned Practice. There are going to be 12 spaces. Currently, there's about 15 people who have put their hand up and said they want to be on the wait list. Typically, you know, not everybody who says they want to do something 2 or 3 months ago comes through. So if you are interested in a small group practice development program that is getting rave reviews from the people in the first group, shoot me an email and get on the list. And then that will be starting on June the 11th, the next group. But registration will be opening before that, but I will notify people on the wait list first. So, Dr. Taylor Vagg, I'm sure you're going to find this a fascinating discussion with lots of lessons for you in terms of what you can do differently so that you can help more people and help people more. Hi, Taylor. Thanks so much for getting on the call.
Hey, Martin. Thanks for having me. Always love having a chat with you.
Oh, likewise. So we'll get into the standard under the influence questions in a minute, but I guess the reason that I wanted to have you on is, first of all, I admire a lot of what you've done. You've done some phenomenal things in terms of service to the profession for many years, being on the board of the Australian Chiropractors Association and a whole lot of other roles sort of connected to that, and been very actively involved in the profession over many years. And at the same time, you've had a wealth of experience across a lot of different domains where you've practiced as an associate, you've practiced as a practice owner and gone team development sort of roles there. You've mentored lots of people, and then you've been you've had kids. You've done all these different things all at the same time. It sounds exhausting when I run
out.
Wow, I know. Yeah, but I guess what I wanted to do was to have a chat in terms of your learnings along the way, in that I think you've faced a lot of challenges that other people also face that you've navigated really successfully, at least from the outside. And so I would be super curious to learn your insights and also I think many of the listeners would also find a heap to learn from your path through the profession. So that was a big preamble, wasn't it?
Especially wow, thanks, Martin.
There was no question involved in it.
I've been wondering what I've been doing over the last 20 years, so I'm glad that you just summarised it.
How long have you been in practice for now?
This is my 21st year
21.
In practice.
Oh, wow. Big year. And so
I've only ever been in one practice, interestingly.
Wow. So yeah. Perhaps give the background, because you are a second generation chiropractor, aren't you?
I am. So my dad's a chiro.
Yep.
My uncle, his brother, is also a chiropractor, but my father's a chiropractor. And I'm in Western Australia, in Fremantle in Western Australia. And when I went through, I wasn't able to study here. So, but my dad was sort of semi-retired. So he started up a little practice here for me to come back to. I went to Sydney and studied and then came back and I worked for him. So that's the associate bit that you were talking about. I was my dad's associate.
Wow. And so, but he was semi-retired and is still semi-retired 26 years later. Yeah.
Yeah. I chatted to him. We went to a seminar together. We went to Cairo Europe together recently. And on the last day, it was all finished and we had lunch together and he said, "Love, I'm fired up. I'm fired up. I think I might actually go back into practice again." Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw your dad at the Australian Chiropractic College their event in March, and he seemed pretty fired up then too. I don't know that your dad does low key super well, but
yeah, he just loves chiropractic.
Yeah,
loves chiropractic. Yeah.
All right. So lots of chiropractic stuff to unpack, but really importantly, what sort of coffee are you under the influence of these days?
Well, it's changed a bit recently, actually. I've always been small almond, long mac, topped up 3/4. I think that's the West Australian term. So like just strong coffee with a bit of almond milk.
Yep.
I've been trying to wean myself off plant-based milk because I just think it can't be good for you. So my brother introduced me to a V60 and bought me one.
Okay. So this is for people playing along at home. It's a pour over type device.
Yes. Yeah. And like it's $30. Yeah. So cheap. It's so low effort. And the great thing I love about it is it's not super strong. You know, like espresso type coffee was really like smacking me in the face in the morning. So yeah. I do really love the pour over coffees, black these days. But having just been to Europe, like I'm trying to find, I really struggled in France and Spain to figure out how they drink their coffee.
Yeah, it's often, I think people have a perception that because Italy typically has really good coffee that everywhere else in Europe will, and France in particular, they have those Robusta beans and it's super dark roast and kind of bitter, sort of big on the bitterness, whereas a V60, any of those pour overs is sort of the opposite of that. You're really looking to use to get more of the fruit sort of characters of coffee rather than the tanniny parts of it. So yeah, very different adaptation for you there. Yeah.
So we had a bit of a coffee adventure, but we worked it out.
But now you're back to the back home with the V60 and all is good in the world. Yeah.
That's right.
So
I feel, now you go.
You go.
I was just going to say before we move on from coffee, I feel like you'll be disappointed to know that I buy my beans pre-ground.
I am.
Let's move on.
I feel like after the recording, we might need be having a little bit of a intervention in terms of where your priorities in life are. But yeah, we can move on. So it's pretty expansive sort of question because you've had an influence in so many areas over your career, and I imagine over that time, the influence that you are trying to have has shifted and changed. I'm super curious, what's the influence that you are looking to have at the moment? What's the priorities for you these days?
It's you've really hit the nail on the head that when I look back at the influence that I've had, there's been such a huge change. A lot of it has been initially internally focused, building, scaling, focused on policy, profession, with selling the practice that I worked in for so long.
So hang on, let's just make sure people know the journey here. So you came back from studying at Macquarie and went into practice with your dad and then worked as an associate for him. And then at some stage you purchased the practice for him.
Yeah.
And he worked as an associate for you, or did he leave then? I can't get the Ken timeline.
He actually left because he sold it to me because he retired again.
Yes.
I don't know why he keeps using that word, but he had a break. And
sort of like the Johnny Farnham of chiropractic, isn't it? He's always on his farewell tour.
I wonder if he'd prefer to be more of a Rolling Stone or a Johnny.
Well, they never say that they're going to retire. That's the only.
That's the difference.
I can see him as more of a Mick Jagger, Keith Richards sort of vibe.
I do too.
Yeah,
he's got the hair.
Yes.
So he went and had a break, and then I took the practice on, changed it a fair bit, turned it into sort of what I'd always dreamed as having as a practice, and building the community down in South Fremantle there. He did end up coming back and working as an associate. We had I think the max associates we had was five, and that's when he was there.
Yeah.
And then he went away and he had another break, and then I continued on. I built an associate practice, just if we're talking about the journey, what happened was I built an associate practice because I realized I needed to do that if I wanted to have children and still have a business. So my focus was in, at that time, was actually in creating a business.
Yeah.
So sort of moving away from that sort of sole practitioner chiropractic model.
Yeah.
So then I went and had two children fairly close together. They're 11 and 12 now. And then once I'd sort of scaled and built this associate practice that I did go back to after maternity leave. I love practicing, so I went back into practice. And then I decided that I wanted to shift my focus a bit, and particularly to more into sort of family, and also to do other things within the profession as well. And I decided to sell. So I think I sold 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
And
but you're still in practice in that practice. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm working.
But you didn't sell to your dad. You didn't sell to your dad. It didn't go completely full circle from.
Oh my goodness.
No.
I'm just saying it that way. No, we couldn't work together now. No. I was doing a postgraduate in pediatrics, and I was chatting to one of the girls there just about her becoming potentially a senior associate in the practice. And she said, "Oh, the next thing I'm looking for is a buy-in." You know, she'd already been practicing 10 years. And I said, "Well, do you want to buy the whole lot?"
Yeah.
And she said, "Yeah." And I said, "Great, let's meet up next week."
Wow.
Yeah.
Move fast.
Well, yeah, I'd been thinking about it for a while, and I'd already sort of, I think one of the things that I'd noticed with my friends selling practices is that they weren't actually sort of selling them the way that normal businesses are sold and not preparing their practices to be sold that way. So I'd actually already done a fair bit of groundwork and had it professionally valued, and yeah, I was kind of already set up, ready to go.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so really interesting, and this is a question without notice because I didn't have these on the list, but I feel like there's a bunch of different things that you have been quite impactful, quite successful with there that are things that people are often curious about how you go about it. So how, in terms of a couple of take-homes, if you were to look at what made the difference in terms of you being able to successfully grow your own practice. So you were coming into a practice that had a presence, but you didn't really, you know, you were coming out as a new graduate with all the new graduate insecurities that we all had in terms of, well, you know, I'm young, I'm new, I'm not as good an adjuster as my dad is, and that's what people are used to. All those stories we can tell ourselves. What would be the, you know, if you were to say one thing to somebody in the same circumstance, what do you think the most important things for new graduates now who are like, I want to be more successful. I want to help more people. What should they do or think or whatever?
Mm. Well, I think, I mean, you and I know each other, so you know that I'm a very, I'm a procedurally based person and I'm big into implementation. However, I, at that stage of my career, that's not the things that I would suggest that you focus on, interestingly. When I look back to when I graduated, I was successful in building a practice quickly. The couple of biggest things were mentors, surrounding myself with really great mentors. I feel like our profession is incredibly generous in terms of how much time and wisdom and inspiration that other chiropractors are willing to share. Yeah. I had one chiropractor in Perth who used to just take me out for lunch up at his practice every week when I was really struggling with trying to reconcile what I'd learned at uni and what I knew and was passionate about in chiropractic and how I wanted to practice.
Yeah.
People think because I was born into chiropractic and, you know, my family's in chiropractic, that I would always be inspired and it would all come naturally, but that's, you know, wasn't the case. But I had mentors. I had a lot of, I've always had a coach from the get-go and always went to seminars that made me feel inspired and surrounded myself with people who, as I said, were really generous with their knowledge. So mentors was a big thing. And then the other thing, the two other big things at that stage in the early part of your career is your mindset and your goals.
Yeah.
I used to write down my goals. I used to put my goals on the back of my door. So every time I walked out, I was just reminded of that.
Yeah.
There's a lot that goes on in those early years with, for me, there was with negative thought, with challenges, with the not good enough. And just, I actually would surround myself visually with what my goals are.
Yeah.
And then I would make sure that I would do the things that would feed a really great mindset, and whether that was affirmations or surrounding myself with really good people. I've always had a great tribe in chiropractic.
Yeah.
You know, even to this day, I have a similar group of people who surround me, who always inspire me and keep my mindset on track. So
yeah.
I'd say that, yeah, go.
No, I guess two things. I think from in terms of putting action to that, the context in which, you know, both you and I started practice was one where there were events where there was a sort of a natural run on for that. And so going to DG, it would naturally create connections that would create that happening. And I think one of the sort of sad things about DG not being around is that there's to a degree a disconnect. However, I would say that chiropractors haven't lost that openness to connecting and contributing to students or early career chiropractors or really any other chiropractor, that if you are, look, I'm practicing in whatever suburb and I feel like I'm a little bit adrift, I would strongly encourage you to just get in touch with other chiropractors in and around your area. And the thing about the people who are loving chiropractic is that we all want to talk about the things we love. And so it's not an imposition for most of us. It's like, yeah, I'd love to connect with you and share what I've learned. So, and just before you move on, the other thing, so one of the things that I don't know that I said in my massive preamble was that when I was coaching you, one of the things, and I know I've spoken about this before, that was always super impressive was your level of implementation, that we would talk about something and then we would talk a week later and everything was already in happening. Whereas part of the reason that I stopped doing one-on-one coaching was just there was so many of the people who were paying me to help them who we'd get on to the next call and nothing had really been done. There was no action. So what is it? Is it innate in you how do you keep yourself doing stuff that you know you need to do that might be uncomfortable to do? What do you have a mindset hack around that, or is this just who you are?
I think it's a combination of both, Martin. It's definitely inherent within me to be driven to succeed at the things that I've set for myself. So the goals that I've set, that's inherent within me to be a driven person. But in terms of implementation, I really believe that there is nothing more exhausting than a job left undone. And I, like a lot of people, I'm sure, I force myself to do the to-do list because it is way more exhausting to not do it. So oftentimes I'm looking at things and thinking, I don't want to do that. Whether it be respond to an email, respond to a text, like just get the smallest jobs done. But I force myself to do it because I know it's more exhausting not to.
Yeah.
Someone really smart once said to me that great practices do the things that the others don't want to do.
Yes.
Could have been you. Could have been you who said that.
Could have been me. I'm sure I paraphrased it from somebody else if I'm going to attribute it honestly. But yeah, I 100% agree. It's like that. The discomfort of discipline or the pain of regret is your choice. And that thing of just, all right, yes, I don't feel like doing this, but that's actually when it really counts. So,
yeah. And as I get older and my time becomes a little bit tighter, I feel like I have to have more hacks just to get things done because time is a little bit more precious.
Yeah.
And I think as I've progressed down that sort of that journey in practice, the main thing for me has been setting routines. And just being super disciplined with the routines and being super disciplined with time management, because when you're younger, no kids and all the time in the world, it's easier really to get things done. But I think as well as having that mindset around don't punish yourself by not getting things done, also just being disciplined with routines has been a big thing for me in my old age.
And I think, well, I also think one of the things that I've had that's connected to that is that the discipline also extends to having that routine of, well, this time isn't practice time. This time is time for me to chill out. This is time for me to enjoy the stuff that I love doing. And that it's sort of part of the same process. It is intentionally setting up how you're going to spend your time. And when you have fewer commitments, it can get you into a bad habit of, I'll just work until this is done and not be super focused on it. And then it will end up being just, you know, a kind of a, not an efficient way of doing things. Whereas then when you get other commitments in place, it's like you end up with no time to do the other things that make life meaningful. So I think that structure around things is super valuable.
I think Eric Plasker was someone who influenced me back in the old, in the Parker days when he came out.
Yeah.
And he had this model of prep time, play time, prime time. I'm pretty sure was
that's,
him.
That's 100% right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I implemented that back in my 20s and have been doing it ever since. Interestingly, the one I'm the worst at is play time.
Time. Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Mm. Yeah. I have the same thing. Yeah. So for people who are not familiar with Eric's idea, really the idea was I've forgotten which one of the laws it is, but any job will expand to take up the time that you allocate it. And if you're at, let's say you're out to dinner with your family or you're out socializing with friends, but you're checking your email because there's things at work that are a bit undone and you need to be on top of it, or you're at your kid's sporting game and you're making phone calls for work, or you're on a let's say, you know, you're doing the newsletter for the practice, but you're also trying to keep an eye on your kids' homework. Having this blended stuff is exhausting, whereas his idea was be 100% in whatever you're doing. So in practice, make prime time, the time that you're actually seeing people, super efficient, so that you're not trying to write reports or do anything like that at the same time. And then have prep time, have time that's allocated to work on the practice and make sure that your prime time's peak. But then when it's play time, when it's time for you to do the things that you love to do and are important to you, be 100% there. Don't be doing prep time or prime times type stuff. So, yeah. Cool, yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. So we've sort of had a bit of an expansive discussion around the what influence you are trying to have. Was there anything, I know I sort of interrupted you along the way there, was there anything that we left unsaid?
I think where we were leading is that the second, like I was going to say the last part of the journey, but this part of my journey where I'm working in a practice that I've already built, I don't really have to focus on having an influence on building a practice. I can sort of just serve my community. But the influence that I want to have from, like in the chiropractic sphere, is the leadership role that I still have in the practice. So we still have junior associates there who I mentor and train.
Mm-hmm.
But I've also, you know, over the last couple of years, I've really enjoyed helping chiropractors in the first couple of years of their career to kind of transition from university into the practices that they want to develop in the way that some of my mentors did for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's that, what we were talking about before in terms of mindset and goals.
Yeah.
And one of the other things is just helping younger chiropractors to see that by having a really good framework and having great systems, which just sounds super boring, right? Systems, procedures, sounds boring, but having that framework sets you free to be able to build the practice of your dreams, the practice that you love. And I spent so many years developing framework and processes and stuff, and I just see a huge gap there because you're not learning that in university. So where are you learning that so that you can serve your people in the way that you want to serve them without frustration, exhaustion, etc.?
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I think it's one of those things where sometimes people think, like, I'm very structured in, you know, there's these 5 steps to an adjustment visit. There's these 11 steps to a first visit. And when you set up the practice room for me in the morning, the curtains have to be at exactly this level. The glass of water has to be exactly here. The pen has to be exactly there. And people look at it and go, isn't that like really restrictive that you have all these rules around how things have to be? And I look at it as the opposite, where if I have 5 steps, I know that I'm not getting to the end of a visit and thinking, should I be doing more, or have I communicated the value of chiropractic? Have I connected with this person? I know that if I follow my steps, it frees me up to be really connected to people and enjoy the process rather than having this sort of background conversation. And if the curtains aren't at exactly the right point, then I know at some point the light's going to come in on an awkward angle and somebody's going to be lying on their back getting adjusted, and blinding sunlight's going to make it harder for them to get adjusted. Like, all of those things are, it creates the optimal environment so that you're going to have the best, you and the people that you're serving are going to have the best possible experience. And if you think about it in depth once, it then frees you up from like every time having to reinvent what you're going to do that day.
Yeah, 100%. I think it really sets you free to be able to do your best job. And also when you're having a bad day, it's all those things are there to support you. So, you know, you might be able to do your best job on your best day without any structure around you, but you're not going to be able to do that on your worst day.
Yeah.
And that's when I think it's really beautiful, particularly when you've got kids and you've got a busy life and you're sleepy and you're tired. I just know that I can go into the practice and I can just lean on all of the system, structure, framework that we have in place and deliver, because the cup of tea will be there, the water will be there, the room will be perfect. I know what I'm saying. My CAs know what they're saying and they're doing. So everyone's just going to get the best service. I'm going to be able to drop in and deliver.
Yeah. Awesome. So in terms then, so that we've spoken a bit about that initial phase of starting up, getting going, mindset, then that phase of developing an associate practice, developing a team, a huge topic, and I know it's way beyond the scope of a single podcast, but if there was one or two really important things there, what would they be?
Probably the number one thing for me would be culture.
Mm-hmm.
When I started to learn about culture, it was after I'd already had people working in the practice.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it was explained to me that, well, actually you already have a culture, you might not know it, what it is, and you might not have actually articulated it. And so it was really, because, you know, I was having problems with not hiring the right people or bringing people on board and then things not really working out. And when I started to learn about how to recognize your team culture, how to develop and communicate your team culture, that's when I started hiring people who were engaged in my vision, our vision and our mission, started hiring the right people. And a big part of our culture was having people with a buy-in who really is able to, I really feel like that just develops the most beautiful teams, because everybody is there involved. And as a principal chiropractor, it kind of sets you free a little bit.
Yeah.
So doing an exercise in how to develop culture, and as a team, defining your culture. So we just didn't do it once. Like every year we would go through the exercise and define what our culture is. And importantly, things like what do we love? What do we love about our current culture?
Yeah.
What don't we love? And what do we want to be part of our culture that isn't part of our culture right now?
Yeah.
They're really great questions that we would ask every year in the team. And it was it sort of started to be a bit of a springboard
for
everything else we did.
Now, that seems like a really cool framework. I think there's a lot of people who will do the, you know, vision statement, mission statement, those sort of things that kind of have maybe implicit in it that idea of what is there already and what do we like and what don't we like, but having that different framework of what do we like that we have, what would we like to take out of it, what would we like to add in, seems like a more tangible version of that to me. Is that your experience of it?
Yeah, and it also is a very, yes, it is. It's tangible and it's usable in every day. And it allows, so sometimes what I was finding is that you do the vision statement, you do the mission statement, and even if, you know, we had it up on a wall, it would sort of sit there.
Yeah.
Whereas the culture, so we determine five, like we often, we'll go between three and five sort of cultural statements. And we use them all the time to keep each other accountable. And I just felt like it was usable and it was dynamic.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff came up that allowed us to bond as a team. Bond probably isn't the right word, but to kind of give everybody some autonomy. And it, like, for example, when we were sitting there and we were talking about culture, one of the CAs who'd been there for a long time, she kind of felt empowered to say, I think in our culture there's double standards.
Yeah, okay, good.
Went, well, what do you mean? She said, well, you guys come in as the chiropractors. The chiropractors will come in and, you know, you might check your phone or you're in the back office. But as CAs, like, we're expected to be on all the time. You're holding us to a certain standard, but we aren't really empowered to hold you to that standard. And that was, you know, that was so groundbreaking for our practice, because then everything shifted and everyone went, okay, we're all a team. We have to all act the same way.
Good. Interesting. Super cool. So rewinding now right back to the start, you grew up sort of within chiropractic, but what sort of inspired you to become a chiropractor?
It's going to sound a bit corny, but because it was sort of a conversation that my dad and I had when I was a teenager. We were at the kitchen table and I said to him, why do all my friends take medications?
Yeah.
So it was pretty common back then for my girlfriends to have, you know, Panadol, in their pencil case. We played netball, that everyone would be taking over-the-counter stuff. That, you know, I hadn't had a pharmaceutical drug at that point. I was born at home. Like, I sort of knew we were a bit different. And I said to him, why does everybody else take medicines and drugs and why don't we? That was how sort of simplistic it was for me at the time. And Dad pulled out a piece of paper and he just explained above, down, inside, out to me by sort of just drawing the brain, nerve system. And he said, so when you have a subluxation, your brain doesn't talk to your body very well. And when I adjust those subluxations, your brain talks to your body better and your body just works better.
Yeah.
And that, it was so, he's a pretty, you know, he explains things pretty simply. And I was like, well, hey, I really want to do that. Yeah. I want to do that. How do you do that? And so from that point, everything I sort of did in my high school, like in my upper two, my last 2 years of high school, was all leading towards me then becoming a chiropractor, going to uni, et cetera. We always joke, like, have you seen my big fat Greek wedding and the dad is Windex fixes everything? Yeah, so my dad like that with adjustments.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, and they explained why, and that really inspired me to become a chiropractor.
Very cool. So along the journey, what or who would you say have been your chiropractic influences?
Well, yes, I guess Dad got me started.
Yeah.
Then at uni, I got really lucky at uni. One of the first classes I went into was a philosophy class by John Kelly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was sitting there and he went, you cannot, what did he say? He said, you cannot sell. You can't even give away that you do not own yourself. Yeah. I thought, right, here we go.
Yeah. So John Kelly, for people who didn't go through Macquarie Uni, at least in the era that you and I did, is an amazing chiropractor, really interesting blend of academically, intellectually very, very high level thinker, and philosophically very inquisitive, and was involved in teaching in the era that I was at Macquarie Uni philosophy and neurology, which I sort of feel like is a really good double act. And then for many years was teaching philosophy at Macquarie Uni, or Sydney College of Chiropractic, then Macquarie Uni. Super passionate guy, really clear thinker.
Super clear. You know, some of the messages he had in that first year that I was at Macquarie, I still think about today, about being specific and about intent. He talked about intent, adjusting with intent and specificity. I still think about that today in practice. Yeah. I was then lucky enough to actually work for John while I was a student as a CA, which was super special. Yeah, so he influenced me a lot in my younger years. And then I had a mentor called Mark Pope, who's a chiropractor. I spoke about him earlier in Perth. And then I had a whole bunch
It was Mark who was taking you out for lunch.
Yeah,
great guy.
He used to ask me just really at the time what I thought was super hard questions.
Yeah.
And I look back now, he was just sort of just trying to challenge me on my thinking in chiropractic. He was really just trying to challenge my thinking in terms of the difference between mechanism and vitalism.
Yeah.
That was sort of the big thing I had a hard time reconciling after uni, how to communicate that. And then in those, I mean, I feel like I've coached with everyone. I've been coached by Mark Possels, Sean Powers, who's a Parker. The Parker principles have influenced me right from being a student. When I was a student, we had a group that got together once a week, and every week we would just pick a Parker principle and we'd talk about it.
Yeah.
And then when I got enough money, I started going to the seminars, and then I started coaching with Sean Powers, who I believe her vision back then was to shut down all her local pharmacies.
It sounds very Sean-like, yes.
She's a powerhouse, man, powerhouse. And then, you know, I've coached with Lawrence Tam, with you've obviously been a huge influence on me, particularly in scaling my practice and how to set up frameworks so that I can be set free and do the things that I needed and wanted to do with my family at the time.
Oh, thank you.
And huge influence. And, you know, you were talking about the ACA, the CAA back then.
Yeah.
The one thing about that is when I was on that board for 8 years, I got to be surrounded by some of the best minds in chiropractic.
I was about to say that era. I mean, I think people who are serving at that level all the time are amazing. That era was a particularly sort of challenging one, interesting one, but you had, a really amazing group of people who were serving on the board at that time.
Yeah, we sure did. And people who so smart and so busy that, you know, all those people that sat on those boards led really busy lives with practices and families, but their desire to influence chiropractic and its influence in Australia was so big that they just put so much time into it. And they're really inspiring guys like Tony Croak, Mark Uren, Billy Chow. I shouldn't have started saying names because I'll forget people.
Now you forget people. Yeah.
You know the guys.
Yes.
And
yes.
Tracy Woody Shanks was on there with me for a long time too.
Yeah. And did you say Angus Pike and I talked over the top of you?
No, because I was never on the board with Angus.
Ah, okay, cool. I just thought I misheard what you were saying. Sorry.
Yeah, Angus was on the Victorian board.
Yeah, I think he was president of Victoria in that era. So yeah, very cool. Yeah, so just interesting. I think both you and I have served on lots of boards, and I think there's a lot of value that you get from that contribution. I mean, there's a lot of pain in the ass and, you know, being away from family and just working on stuff that can be a bit of a grind. However, I think it is one of those things where contributing to something bigger than yourself has some intrinsic value to the world, but also to us as individuals. For people out there who are looking to take their level of contribution up a level, do you have any sort of advice to?
I think probably the first thing, if you want to increase your level of contribution in the profession, is to realize that this might be a gross generalization, but a lot of people say no. If you look around and at the people who are getting things done in terms of even in small committees, holding workshops for students, all the way up to the boards, you're going to see a lot of the same people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's not because, well, not only because they're amazing at it or they're better at it, it's just because they said yes to it.
Yeah.
So most of us, I certainly was completely unskilled going in. I think I was 24 or something. You know, I was fresh out of uni. I just started practicing and I got asked to run for an election for the national board. And I'm a bit of a yes person. So I said yes blindly, but I didn't have any special qualification. I didn't know what I was doing at all. So even if it's just a small committee, like if someone says to you, hey, we're thinking about running a Women's Day, International Women's Day lunch in wherever it is for your association to get chiropractors together, just say yes. Like don't think too much about it. Don't think too much, well, what could I do? What could I contribute? I don't have the skills for that. Just say yes, because most people are saying no.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that's statistically correct, but it's my sense that a lot of people say no.
Yeah.
So just say yes, work it out. And also just coming back to what we've both said about our profession is that we're in a profession of people who are very generous with their time, expertise, and just with their support. So everyone will just be stoked that you're giving a bit of a hand and they'll help you out, show you the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even a step beyond that, if you're not asked, I would say putting your hand up. So if you have an area of, if you're a young woman in practice, then going to your association and saying, I'd like to be involved in I'd like to help the women in chiropractic group. Or if you are somebody who has an interest in sports chiropractic or whatever it is, whatever the group is, almost everything, I think everything in chiropractic is volunteer run. So if you're a volunteer, they will welcome you being involved.
You're always going to be welcomed with open arms. And I completely agree with what you've just said. And even if you don't have a special interest, like if you think you're just the general chiropractor, but you want to get involved, just offer your time, They'll be so grateful for it.
Absolutely. So moving on. Oh, go on. Yep.
Well, I was just going to say, because I don't think we said it before, but every single time I've done that, I've always gotten more out of it than I've given.
Yeah.
Every single time.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Really important. But there is a, you know, a sacrifice that you make in terms of giving up your time, but the rewards are infinitely higher in terms of what you learn and who you get to know. And that feeling of just being part of something bigger than yourself is, I think, a really important thing to have in terms of your own personal growth.
100%.
So outside of chiropractic, any other life influences, perspectives, anything else that you feel you want to share?
For me, I feel like I'm kind of in an expansive time of my life where I'm not restricted by running a business, but I still get the beautiful pleasure of doing what I love, which is adjusting people.
Yeah.
And I can spend more time on being with my family. And I'm also looking at other, I'm really inspired at the moment by people who are doing cool stuff, people who are doing new and interesting things. And that's when I was in the sort of the bubble of my own practice, I didn't really get to see a lot of that. We were talking earlier that I've just been to Europe for a seminar over there, met a bunch of different chiropractors, all doing really cool, amazing, different stuff, thinking outside of the box. So I'm kind of being inspired by all of that while I'm trying to figure out what the next phase of life and practice looks like for me.
Yeah.
And one of the main things just outside of practice, but it influences my practice hugely, is just to focus on governing my own state.
Yeah.
As I've come out of being in a cortisol dominant state, I've realized that it's really valuable for me to manage my own state. So I've sort of gone down the rabbit hole of how to manage dopamine, particularly me and a few of my friends. We joke about how we often mine for dopamine and for short, sharp bursts of dopamine. So yeah, I've been really focusing on that, getting into some Vedic meditation and using, you know, sauna and cold plunge, and really trying to manage my state as I've come out of practice and have more time to focus on my own health and well-being in a way that I haven't really before.
Oh, awesome. That sounds super cool. Exciting times.
Yeah.
So Taylor, thank you so much for making the time and overcoming your resistance to being on the podcast to come and share your experience and wisdom. I think that there was so much in today's episode that is going to be super valuable for other people as they go through similar journeys. I feel like the thoughtfulness with which you've gone through that process is a real gift to the rest of us, and your ability to have made an impact in so many different areas is something that we can all learn from. So thank you for all your contribution, and also thank you for sharing it with the Under the Influence people.
Thanks, Martin. I always love chatting with you, so thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening to the Under the Influence podcast. Make sure to subscribe so that you can catch all future episodes of the Under the Influence podcast. If you enjoyed today's show, then you will love the online program, The Retention Recipe. It's all about communication strategies that you can employ in somebody's first 12 visits that help transition them from a pain level of health belief to a prevention level of health belief, and open up the opportunities for them to see chiropractic as part of a performance or wellness lifestyle. Check it out at insideoutpractices.com.